Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Nonfiction, where in reality, we discuss relevant topics of the past and the present. I'm your host, The Communicator. Our show today is Veterans Voices, Segment 3, of our ongoing audio documentation of the plight of those of us who served our country and are currently dealing with day-to-day trials and tribulations of civilian life. Our guest is Ivan Cartanega, a U.S. Air Force vet. Welcome, Ivan, to Nonfiction.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure having you, Ivan. You were on our premier show, you spoke very eloquently, and I'm very happy that we can do this again. Ivan, you served in the military, specifically the U.S. Air Force, and you are now considered a veteran. What exactly does this mean to you?
I mean, being considered a veteran is an honor. Not many people can actually serve in the military, and those that do, a lot of people, only do a few years or so and get out. But as a veteran, you have a title that you hold for the rest of your life, that you served and that you served honorably, and then you finished your career, finished your duty proudly, and then we're able to go back to civilian life. So it's just it's an honor and a privilege to have been able to serve and then, complete that duty and then contribute now to the civilian world.
Let's go back to when it began. How old were you when you first enlisted, and what were the circumstances?
So when I first enlisted, So I think I was around 19 years old. It's kind of a funny story, but I was interested initially. I was going to join a dual program with the Army National Guard that a friend of mine was going in when I was like 17, and then I decided not to do that at the time. So I actually went away to college first. So I graduated, then I went to Howard University for a year, and then I decided to come back home because college was expensive. So then I decided to join the military just for a few reasons. Honestly, one was because I wanted to get away for a while. Two, I wanted to just learn some different things and some actual practical skills. And then third, I realized afterwards that it would also pay for school because I wanted to also finish school.
Right.
And two of my uncles were in the Air National Guard at the unit close to where I live. So I took that route to start with.
What were your duties in the Air National Guard once you got out of basic training? And what bases were you stationed at?
So, like most people in the Air Force, I started off in Lackland, and then I went
right.
to from Lackland to Shepherd for tech school. So I was a electrical and environmental systems specialist. So I was working on aircraft, and that's really what I wanted to do. I mean, I found it amazing from the first time that I stepped on the flight line that I saw the jets taking off, and we have fighter jets over here because I still live close to the base I was at. And
right.
I just thought it was amazing. And, it's hard to describe the feeling that you get when, you see the fighter jets take off. And, I actually made a promise to myself at that point that, if I ever lost that feeling, it would be time to retire. And it's funny because 25 years later, I never lost the feeling. Just, my body wasn't what it used to be. So I ended up retiring mostly because of a back injury I sustained. But yes, I and throughout my career, I mean, I went on every deployment I could when I was young, and I went to many stateside deployments all over. I mean, I think I've been to Shepherd at least 3-4 times on different things, Keesler, Tyndall, a couple other places in Florida, Alpena, Nellis, McGuire, you know, and then had other stateside missions in D.C. and other places. And then overseas, you know, we've been to Qatar a bunch of times, in Kuwait and Iraq. So a whole lot of deployments.
Right, right. So I'm just curious, what made you decide to go into the Guard as opposed to going into regular Air Force? And was the Air Force, I know you said you were thinking about going into the Army Guard, was the Air Force your primary choice, or did you consider maybe other branches like the Navy or the Marine Corps, or was it always just focused on the Air Force?
It was mainly focused on the Air Force. Like I said, when I was young, I had looked into that Army program because a friend of mine was
right.
going into that, but it wasn't like my primary interest. But, you know, I had family already in the Air Force, and anybody will tell you, and I'm not just biased, but everybody will tell you that the Air Force is probably the best branch to belong to. So I was primarily interested in that. And then as far as the Guard is concerned, you know, the main thing I tell people, especially those looking to get into the military, that the difference between Guard and Reserves and active duty is that when you go into Guard and Reserve, like you have more of a stateside mission, especially in the Guard.
Right.
You have a commitment to the state, and then you also have your federal mission. But also the big difference between the Guard and active duty is that in the Guard, you honestly get the best of both worlds because you get all the state benefits and you get all the federal benefits. And the state benefits, they vary by state. So some states are very good and others have less benefits. So one of the things is the state of New Jersey, if you're looking at school-wise, in the state of New Jersey, if you go to any state college or university, they will pay for your tuition for free.
Okay.
It won't pay for, like, room and board, but you'll pay for your college. And it goes up. So you definitely have additional military education benefits from the Guard in the state of New Jersey. And then on top of that, you can also use your GI Bill if, say, you want to go to a school outside of the state or, you know, an online school somewhere else or a private school that's not state-funded. So you get a lot more benefits in addition to the federal benefits. And that's one of the major benefits. Now, one of the bad things about being in the Guard, though, is that, you know, when you're on active duty for the most part, that is your full-time career. That is your full-time job. You know, they give you a place to stay. You know, you have your full-time job and everything. And in the Guard, for most people, it's only you live at home. You usually have another career or you're going to school, and then you do the Guard part-time. Now, some of us also work full-time. So there's many different statuses in the Guard, and, I mean, I think there's like 20-something of them, which it can be very confusing. But you can also be full-time. So like me, there's a lot of people that also made their 20-year active duty career at a Guard or Reserve base. So you can be active Guard Reserve and a whole slew of other statuses. So you can be active duty and in the Guard or Reserve at the same time.
Wow,
and so I did that also.
Yeah, I never knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing too is that there's other positions in the Guard, let's say, that you can also be a federal employee. So you can also be a military employee and a federal employee at the same time. And you can mix all three. And I think throughout my career I have, because I've been a traditional guardsman where you're only doing 1 week in a month. I've been active duty as an AGR, and I've been a federal employee. So I have time towards military retirement, active duty, and a federal job, which also then carries over to my current civilian job because I still work for the federal government.
Right. Right. So
there's
much.
A lot of different things with the Guard, and I will say one of the problems with being in the Guard though is that they differentiate your active duty time from your Guard and Reserve time, and where that comes into play is when you're talking about say disability benefits afterwards. If you're on active duty, you could stub your toe at home or break your foot. Let's say it's a better. You can break your foot, and if you continue to have problems with that, you can get a disability rating because you broke your foot. And everything on active duty is considered being on active military. Whereas in the Guard and Reserve, the only time that counts is when you're on full-time military orders for some certain types of deployments.
Yeah.
So if you're just doing like 1 week in a month or something like that, or you know, you're just at home and something happens, that then when you go to try to get a disability rating, it's more difficult because you have to prove that you were on military orders as part of a contingency at the time.
Thank you for explaining that. That was very beneficial to hear. I've been, after over 12 years as an enlisted airman in the Guard, you became an officer. Talk about the seed that led to this.
So I got to a point after I finished college and everything, and I just kind of wanted to be more involved and to do more. So like I said, I was in a small shop, and you know, it's usually considered back shop, but it's also a flight line in the garden. And I just kind of want to be more involved and do more as far as things go. And I think by that point, I had worked my way up to a E6, I think. So I was a technical sergeant at that point. And in the Guard, it's more difficult because on active duty, you know, they give you tests. And if you score above a certain line, then you'll get selected to a commissioning.
Right.
In whatever, you know, career field. But for the Guard, promotions tend to be more difficult because you're limited to what you have on your base, whereas active duty, limited to what's available worldwide. So in the Guard, there's not like a test. It's really more of an interview process. It's a lot more difficult because the competition's a lot fiercer too. So on average, active duty, people will take the test, and they'll be selected at whatever stage that they're in. But in the Guard, the average person selected to become an officer usually has at least 12 to 14 years in, already has a degree or a master's degree, and, you know, has X amount of experience. So it's very super competitive in the Guard to get an officer position, especially because there's very few of them. Compared to the active component. So I forget how many times I had tried, but I think somewhere around my sixth time, I finally was selected for a position. And so I went from becoming a person that worked in maintenance, that worked on F-16 aircraft, to then becoming a maintenance officer. So now I was in charge of the maintenance section.
Yeah. So that was the juxtaposition. To me, is interesting. How was the transition, Ivan, into being and becoming an officer? Was it automatic or was it gradual?
The transition. I mean, some things were gradual and some things were automatic. But I mean, you know, as they tell you going into any leadership position, you know, they say to like get used to having lunch alone and. That does kind of end up happening because there is a separation, and whether you want it to or not, and even in the Guard, where it's a smaller community and you pretty much know everybody, that once you finish your training and you come back, because of your rank and because of your position, you know, you tend to act a little bit differently. And then the people around you, even though you've known them all your life and they've been your friends, they treat you differently too because they respect your rank. And also just the level of responsibility is different. And I think that's the main reason why you have a lot of people that stay enlisted and don't want to become officers, because the level of responsibility is a lot more, because, you know, if you even the rank I was at before, basically when you become a first lieutenant, you're basically almost the equivalent of, like, say, an E8, you know, somebody that's been around forever and has, you know, 30 years of experience. So that's the level of responsibility that you're given as a lieutenant starting off in the military. And it is a big responsibility. And, you know, like they say, one of the best things you can ever do when you are a lieutenant is to listen to your senior enlisted leadership. And I think it makes it easier too, coming from an enlisted background. And I think almost anybody that's been in the military will probably tell you that most of the best officers all came from being enlisted, because you understand how the military works from the ground up. You understand what it's like to be in the trenches and to be, you know, starting, you know, from an airman basic or like a private, and then working your way up. You have a lot more respect for the enlisted ranks and what they do, and for the Air Force as a whole. And you really get more of an understanding how every position from the bottom up is extremely important.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, Ivan, you do another 12 and a half years as an officer, and it leads into becoming 25 years. What made you decide to retire? What factors led to this decision?
Well, the main issue was I had injured my back at some point, and that was really the main problem that I had. Honestly, it was more of a physical issue. You know, I was always a good athlete.
Right.
I ran track. I did triathlons and all that. But I had gotten to the point where, you know, I was in constant back pain, and, you know, my right leg didn't work too well. So by that point, it was kind of time to hang it up. I didn't have the physical ability to keep on going in my position. And actually, by the time I retired, I was out of the aircraft side, and I was doing budget. So.
Okay.
You know, I had transitioned over to I guess the back shop area, because I couldn't, you know, walk around all that well either. And so that was kind of the main reason why I retired. You know, other than that, sometimes you kind of know when it's time. And in the position I was in,
right,
I didn't really have the ability to move up either. So it was a combination of things. I didn't really have the ability to go anywhere. And my physical condition wasn't the greatest. And by that point, I kind of just wanted to spend more time with my younger children.
Sure.
So I decided to retire at that point. And then I had already begun transitioning out. So I ended up getting a position with the Department of Veterans Affairs as an analyst. So that was kind of my transition out. But the transition still was very difficult. Even being in the Guard, and it had a lot to do with COVID and everything. And so I just came back from a year-long deployment, and, you know, COVID was happening, and, you know, I had the new position lined up, but the first year or so from that position since I was deployed, I didn't really get to even do that. And then I came. And, you know, a month later, I retired. So I kind of went into the civilian world very quickly. And
right,
the biggest mistake that I say that we made was we had decided to relocate back to where we used to live at in central Jersey, which is right outside of New York. And due to COVID and just not having lived there in such a long time, because, you know, again, military, we moved around a lot.
Right.
The area had changed. So, you know, we were from there. We're familiar with the area. My wife's whole family is there, and we visited, but we didn't realize just a lot of the changes in the area. And we had bought a house and done all that, and it kind of expected things to be how they were when we used to live there. But the area had changed a lot. And long story short, you know, I will tell anybody that's, you know, transitioning out of the military, just to make sure you really take your time and figure out where you want to live. You know, I think this is the reason, too, why a lot of people, when they retire, they kind of stay around where their last base was, because you don't really have to change much.
That's advice.
So we ended up moving, and, you know, we had a beautiful home and everything, but the area wasn't that good. So long story short, we ended up selling that place. We only stayed there for about 6 months, and then we were kind of transient for a while until we figured out the housing issue, because all of a sudden, you know, trying to find housing was a nightmare, especially in New Jersey, because this is such a crowded state. So any good place to live was super expensive. It's very difficult to find even an apartment. And then the prices of housing doubled, in fact, tripled in some places, depending on where you're trying to live. And even if you were willing to pay more money, you were getting outbid by people that were just paying anything to get a place.
Right,
and the condition hasn't improved, because that was two and a half years ago now. And the condition, honestly, I think it stayed about the same, if not gotten a little bit worse, because now the interest rates are higher and less people are selling. So to find homes in New Jersey has been extremely difficult, and it's still super expensive. So I will say, anybody that's transitioning over, figure out where you're going to live, or just take your time doing it. If you're in a good place where you are now, stay there until you kind of figure out where you're going and what you're doing. Because we ended up going through all these moves, and then we ended up half a mile from where we used to live at before. So we really could have just stayed where we're at in the first place. Because now we're down the street, but we paid twice as much to be back in this area.
Understood. Now, Ivan, do you think the Air Force prepared you adequately to transition into civilian life?
I think the Air Force kind of did what it could, but I think every branch of the military should have some type of a civilian liaison, maybe put into Veterans Affairs, like a military retiree specialist that's now on the civilian side as part of the Department of Veterans. If the military can only do what they can while you're in there. And a lot of it is they usually start like 6 months out and give you briefings and things like that, but you really don't know what you need or what's going to happen until you get out, and there really isn't a transition for that. And being an officer, too, we kind of just get left to figure things out on our own most of the time. But a lot of things I did know, but there's a difference between, you know, the classroom setting and, you know, prepare for this and that and real life. So the difficulty of finding housing was something we weren't prepared for, and having to move. The change in career fields is another thing that's difficult to get used to. But I think the hardest part, especially for people that have a military career, was just mentally transitioning from being out of the military, because I didn't realize it at that time, but I had been in the military longer in my life than I had been out of it. You know, so I had, you know, being in for 25 years and, you know, longer than the 19. So I pretty much at this point, all I knew was the military. And that plus being in, you know, in an officer position, and I retired as a major, is almost like a shock to the system, because the world that you're used to is now different. You're no longer in the military. You're not going back there. You're not putting on a uniform. So I kind of had to just get used to that change, the work environment change, and just reincorporating myself into the civilian world, because there really is not a transition for that to becoming a civilian.
What type of benefits did you retire with, and did you qualify for VA disability payments?
Yes, and like I mentioned earlier, the one good thing about being in the Guard is that you can start your VA disability earlier than you can on active duty. I think on active duty you start about 6 months before you're about to retire, because you can't have VA disability and be on active duty at the same time. But
right.
For the guard, you can have your military disability while you're serving in the guard. It's just that you have to deduct whatever your military time is. So if you're a traditional guardsman and you're only doing 1 week in a month, then those 2 days or those 4 days that you do every month have to be subtracted from your disability pay.
Okay.
Is a lot more difficult because, again, you have to turn in your DD-214s. You have to show that your injury occurred while you were on military orders, so you have to have your paperwork from your medical squadron at your base. You have to usually have like a thing that they call like a LOD, where they wrote up that this injury happened during this time, because it, like I was saying, that on active duty, everything that happens to you is on active duty, so it all counts. Whereas
right.
In the guard, you have to prove that you were on military orders to claim that. And so it was a bit more difficult, and it was time consuming. And so the initial time, I got an initial rating, and then I had to, put in some other stuff to then, a couple years later, I think it took to get that increase. So I think overall it was like either 3 or 4 attempts over many years to finally get everything completed. Being in the guard, being a big part of that. And also just throughout your military career, some of your injuries get worse. So, I was able to qualify for disability and, the benefits that come with that.
Great. So in the bigger picture, Ivan, we hear so many horror stories of veterans falling through the cracks and experiencing mental illness, drug addiction, and homelessness. Why do you think this has become so prevalent?
I think a large part of it is really people not knowing what's available to them. It also varies by state, because I know in the state of New Jersey, we even have a couple of places for veterans that veterans can go to if they are homeless. I think Veterans Haven North is one of them. And I know that location because during Hurricane Sandy, we set up a mobile hospital there. But in the state of New Jersey, that is available. And there's a lot of other benefits available, both federal and state, to veterans. But I think a lot of times people are not aware of what is available to them. That's one part. The other part, too, is sometimes as a veteran, like I said, one, the transition is hard, and two, sometimes we don't realize what we need or what's causing, our issues. Because, I also suffer from PTSD, and I will tell you that I had a close friend of mine, you think I would have known better because we went on almost every single deployment together. But I didn't realize until years later that he also was suffering from PTSD. But for a lot of people, the way it presents itself is different. And for some people, you don't realize that maybe sometimes you just become emotionally detached, or, you see that people have family issues and they end up getting divorced, and you don't know how it presents itself. And so people don't get help. And what happens is then they, some people turn to drugs, they turn to other things to kind of self-medicate or to cope. And you don't really realize kind of why you're even doing that. And so promoting those benefits and, you know, the help that you have available, like, you know, psychology and things like that while you're enlisted, would really help. But also, again, when you get out, having people that can maybe contact veterans and let them know, like, what's available, it would be really helpful. You know, because they're like, there's clinics and there's other things available around here that we use, psychiatry and psychologists available through the VA. And there's also independent places that you can go to that also help veterans. And like I said, a lot of times if you don't go looking for it, you won't even know it's there. And sometimes, depending on the state that the veteran is in, maybe it's up to, you know, family and friends to look up this information. So I know there's hotlines you can call in the VA where you can get help. There's hotlines in New Jersey. There's just really a lot out there available to help veterans. But either a lot of times I think we don't know about it, or we're not in the right place to ask for help at that point. And I think
lack
it's critical sometimes to, yes, lack
yeah.
of information. So that
yeah,
I think
yeah.
that information should also be provided to the veteran's family, especially when we're transitioning out or retiring, that they should include the whole family in this process. Because maybe sometimes,
exactly.
you know, the significant others might be in a better place to help.
That's a good point. Ivan, on the other side of the coin, many vets I talk to are vocalizing how many immigrants who are crossing our borders are being subsidized by our government with debit cards, food subsidies, and free housing. Why does it seem to many that the government cares more about these immigrants than veterans who served and fought for their country?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily put those two things together. But like I said, for the military folks, and I will tell you just firsthand my own personal experience, the VA has really been helpful to me. I will say the VA probably saved my life and helped me to continue to be successful. And, you know, thanks to the benefits I've gotten through the VA, I think they've been way better than anything provided and anything that any of these immigrants or anybody else is even getting. So if when you do use the VA and you do take advantage of the benefits that are available, it's great. And I will say that as far as education, as far as jobs are concerned, as far as medical benefits are concerned, you cannot be. In fact, most civilians can't even beat the benefits that we can get. But the thing is, a lot of people need to understand and know how what's available, how to apply for it, how to get it. And there are liaisons, you know, in different places for that. But I really wish there was an easier way for veterans to get this information. I mean, I know you can look it up online, but it'd be so much easier if there were just, you know, people to talk to, I think, in a way. And I know you can talk to people in the 800 numbers, but a lot of times you want a face, you know, you want an actual person,
yeah,
maybe, or another veteran to talk to and be like, hey, what do I do? Somebody really tell me, because things can get very confusing. And that's why a lot of people don't like even just the disability process, because it's not simple. It gets very confusing in what you qualify for. I'll get into one of those stories a little bit later. But it can be very confusing, and it turns very legalish and very lawyerish at some points when you're doing that. And that's why a lot of people just try to avoid the VA in general, especially
right.
because even the VA tends to have, and the disability process tends to have, a bad stigma associated with it. And I think that's also one of the biggest problems for veterans, that, you know, you get taught by older people and, you know, stereotypes and things like that, that Veterans Affairs is bad, and it's not. It's actually the complete opposite of that.
I got you, definitely. Ivan, please give me your thoughts on how do you think the military has changed How do you think it is now compared to when you first enlisted?
I think the military, I mean, some things have improved and some things have not. I think one of the things that has improved is just the outlook on medical conditions and mental conditions, I will say, simply because, you know, back in the day, it was, you know, if you had a medical or physical condition, you'd get kicked out. Whereas now, you know, they'll go through a whole evaluation process and you won't, unless there's a severe issue, a lot of times you won't get kicked out of the military because it's more of an understanding of things what you can or can't do. And I think that part of it has improved. I think for women, it's improved. I think a bit for minorities, it's improved bit because, you know, military, as much as I love the military, you know, it does tend to be a little bit slower to catch up with certain things. And, you know, you could run into different types of issues and racial issues and things like that, which I think really have improved over the years. But what I think has gotten a little bit worse is, especially with the younger generations coming in, they have less of a understanding of discipline and just the rank structure and things like that. And that's something that really needs to be enforced along with just physical standards. And I remember years ago, I was at a conference and, you know, some of the people in the Army were complaining that, you know, they get new recruits and that couldn't pass the PT test, you know, because they pass it in basic training, but then a year later they're completely out of shape. That's one of the other issues that needs to be addressed now.
Yeah, in closing, and the time has really flown, in closing, Ivan, if you can go back and do it all over again, is there anything, looking back, that you might have done differently in your military career?
No, I honestly, I think I probably all would have stayed the same. Honestly, I think if I could have, I probably would have just had more fun deployments and maybe gone, you know, to Hawaii and other places more. But before we run out of time, the one thing I would like to touch on, just so people know, is that make sure that when you're retired, that you understand your benefits and especially your debt benefits upon your death. And I say this because my uncle passed away a few years back, and I was shocked at some of the different changes that happened, and especially because, you know, his spouse was dependent on that as their income. And just understand your military benefits and how they work upon your death. Like, for instance, if you're getting a disability benefit, you have to understand that disability benefit goes away once you die. So that does not, you know, whether you're collecting 60% or 100%, that is gone with the member. So if you
that
and your
doesn't
spouse,
roll over, that doesn't roll
no,
over.
It does
your
not. No, okay. It does not. There is a different type of benefit that if you died from an injury or an illness that was caused during your military service, it's I forget what it stands for, but it's DIC. But if you died from something that was caused through your military service, then your spouse will continue to get that. But if you didn't, then that just automatically goes away. But the other thing is your military retirement, that also does not roll over. You can choose to get like a insurance that will carry over to your spouse, but even that insurance will only goes up to 55% of your retirement pay.
Okay.
So in the instance of my uncle, when he passed away, you know, him and his wife, what they had was his disability plus his retirement. And what happened is he passed away, the disability went away, and now his spouse, instead of having 100% of his retirement pay, now it was cut down to just 55%. So it is a dramatic difference between that, and it helps to understand this. And my uncle, getting back to the disability benefits, he had been in the process of applying for other benefits related to his time in Vietnam, and he never completed that. Because had he done that, then, you know, his death and his disability would have been connected and his wife would have been eligible. Now, she can still apply
right.
for that. She hasn't
right.
yet. But you can still get that all done retroactively, but it's so much easier to do when the member is alive and can get that done. And that's why it's important to get everything done while you can, not just for your own sake, but for your family's sake, and also to know what happens when you retire, what happens when you die. Because, for instance, since I fully retire from the National Guard, I'm considered a gray area retiree. So I don't actually collect my military retirement until I turn 60. So that's also one of the bad things about retiring from the Guard versus active duty. Where active duty, you get a retirement right away.
That's very important. So great to know. Yeah, I got you. And that's so great to know. And, you know, fortunately, we've run out of the show. So, you know, thank you for that. And we'll probably have to do a part three with you because this information is just so needed. And especially thank you about your uncle. That story was very, very beneficial. You've been listening to a new and exciting concept of podcasting called Nonfiction. Today's show is dedicated to all those who serve, helping them in any way possible. Veterans Voices. And our special guest today has been Ivan Cartagena. Thank you so much, Ivan, for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Man, it was chock full of information. We'll talk again. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye now.